Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're speaking today with Deanna Castro, a pediatric neurologist and neuromuscular physician in Dallas, Texas. Dr. Castro, originally from Bogota, Colombia, recently spoke at Cure Duchenne's 2022 Futures Conference in Orlando, Florida. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Larry, for the invitation. Very happy to.
Let's talk about your practice and your experience in treating neuromuscular patients, and specifically with regard to Spanish-speaking patients. Where is the need? Why is this so important today?
Well, I'm in Texas, where we actually have 50% of the population with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. They are Hispanic. And there is a really big need because patients have... We may have a good setup for the pediatric patients under 18 or 21, depending the hospital you're at. But after they graduate, unfortunately, there are not many places where patients can go. And I say that because Hispanic patients usually will have Medicaid. And Medicaid is difficult to get a physician, you know, a group to take Medicaid. So if you're private insurance, you're in better shape than if you're in a Medicaid group. So that's where the need is. Definitely, it's there and it's huge.
There's no particular ethnic component to Duchenne. It's not as if one geographic or ethnic group is more predisposed towards Duchenne muscular dystrophy than another, correct?
I would say that there definitely Hispanic tend to have a high, you know, there is a high number of patients. And more, at least here in Texas and many other areas in the country that I have talked to my colleagues, Chicago is one of them that I was very surprised. So it may be that we have a higher number of Hispanics here.
Do you think there's any particular reason why Hispanic boys would be more predisposed towards Duchenne muscular dystrophy?
I don't know. I don't know what is exactly the reason, but it's definitely something that we need to understand better. Because again, and I can throw this right now here, the research is done in a different population, and we have not done enough research in the Hispanic population, so we don't really know.
Well, one of the big issues, of course, today, diversity and equity, is the fact that Black and Hispanic patients tend to be severely underrepresented in clinical trials. As we all know, clinical trials almost always have a majority white European ethnic component to them. So minorities are not fairly represented in not only clinical trial, but in access to treatment. Can you talk about that as it specifically relates to Latinos?
Oh, definitely. I think that, I mean, first of all, you have to have a place where these patients can go. So let's say here in Dallas, we have different hospitals that treat these patients. But then if you don't have access, for example, if you're an older patient after 18 years of age, you're not going to have access most of the time to clinics. That will be one factor. The other factor is cultural. So we Hispanic, we tend to have that. And I can say for my mom that they always think that research is, oh, you're going to get my son and do, you know, you're going to treat him like a guinea pig. And it's not obviously that way, but culturally there is that understanding that we need to work really hard on trying to change that to allow them to come to the trials. So I have done something with Cure Duchenne last year where we talk about trials for Hispanic families. So we can definitely, we have a lot of work to do in that area.
So there's a cultural aversion to clinical trials, thinking that they may be given dangerous drugs or they won't be taken as seriously as if they were white. Is that the deal? Exactly.
Unfortunately. And then the other thing is that they feel intimidated many times. And I have been fighting for these many years to, you have to have everything translated. Like if you're going to come up with a research protocol, you should come up with an informed consent already in English and one in Spanish. You should not have, I should not have to wait until you come with the translated version of, right? So if you provide all these things, it's going to make our life easier as researchers. And definitely having people that speak Spanish, that is their first language, will make those families more trusting. You know, they will trust more the system and the research per se. To me, it's very important to create that trust relationship with the families. You know, if they know where I'm coming from, I treat their children like they are my children, they will know that I'm not going to put them on anything that can hurt.
Well, on that issue of trust, that raises another issue. You have a large percentage of people who are not in the United States legally. So they may be suspicious because of their immigration status or their lack of a legal status. Is that a factor?
Oh, yeah, definitely it's a big factor. And the problem is that, for example, for children that don't have papers from here, from the U.S., they can have a specific type of insurance that cover them, or they used to. Now it's very hard to get that insurance, but they used to have this insurance that will cover them until the last day of their birthday month at 21 years of age. So at 21 July, let's say your birthday was July 12th, your July 31st, you don't have anything. You're completely, you know, out of the system. So I think that creates a lot of difficulties in that sense. And the parents feel intimidated. They don't speak English very well, or they don't speak at all. And they don't have their things. They don't have a way to get people to help them through navigating the system. It's already hard for us to navigate the system. Even for us that you speak English, it's hard sometimes, the medical system. Imagine for somebody who doesn't speak that language. So I think is that that's one of the biggest issues.
Now, speaking of your ethnic background, of course, I'm just assuming that the vast majority of your patients are either Mexican or Central American.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay. So in the countries where they came from, and I am aware of a Duchenne muscular dystrophy organization in Mexico, at least Mexico, but in the countries where they came, we don't know what kind of medical care they got, or even if the doctors knew what disease those children had. In the case of Duchenne, these boys may have never been properly diagnosed. How do you handle that?
Exactly. I have seen several patients from Mexico who came to as a consultation. And after that, they have been coming once a year, obviously with a lot of difficulties, but they come. And it's surprising to find physicians still doing 3-4 biopsies. Muscle biopsies for no reason, absolutely no reason, not in a research setting, just doing biopsies, doing CK levels, consecutive CK levels, like once a month. There's no point of doing a CK level once a month.
Well, when you find that a boy has a CK level of 20,000, then that's kind of a clear sign he's got Duchenne, okay. No?
Exactly. And right. Sometimes we follow CK levels through research, yes, but you have a specific goal, right? But in these cases, many times, it's just really lack of knowledge. People want to keep doing the same thing that they know, maybe that is muscle biopsy and CK, and also electrodiagnostic testing, like electromyography, that causes pain. It's very uncomfortable. So I have so many kids that come with 3-4 of those, and I'm like, why are you guys doing this? So the lack of understanding the knowledge and the lack of proper guidelines, it's an issue.
Do you have any relationships with big pharma companies that are trying to reach patients who speak Spanish and maybe only Spanish? Are they of any help to you?
I think there is a company, for example, that has to do with a steroid treatment, and they have done a really good job trying to reach out the population. They offer some, you know, some lectures or some things for the Hispanic population. They help some of the Hispanic foundations. There is a Hispanic foundation in the US that I didn't know until 2 months ago. And finally, I met them and we're working very close right now.
What, that deals specifically with neuromuscular disease?
With Duchenne Hispanics.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. Are there organizations in their home countries that help with Duchenne patients?
Really only in Mexico. That's the other countries, like, you know, like all the Central America countries, they don't have any association. Even in Costa Rica, you know, other places that you will think the health, the system is not, you know, it's not that basic, but still they don't have anything.
What about in Colombia?
In Colombia, there is one association. I have talked to the association in Colombia. There is one in Peru. There is one in Ecuador. And obviously you have the other countries that usually they do have strong groups like Brazil, Argentina, Chile. They are usually very advanced in their care. But besides that, the other foundations are really limited and basic to what they can do or they can offer. So right. I think that that's something that we can definitely work to have a reach from the U.S., kind of trying to reach out to and work with all the other foundations.
Do you have any connection, for example, with pharma companies that are trying to enlist Hispanic boys in clinical trials?
I mean, some of the trials we have done, yes, we have had patients coming from outside. But the problem is that there is a lot of red tape and bureaucracy that sometimes doesn't come from the company, from the pharmaceutical company, but from the performance side, like the university. So that's one of the things that I really want to work on. It's one of my objectives, really, is including the Hispanic population and research. So facilitating that as much as we can.
Do you have colleagues, Hispanic, Spanish-speaking colleagues who are in this field, or it's not that common?
It's not that common. There is actually one person in the U.S. who's an Argentinian who is in Stanford University. She's the only one that really speaks Spanish as native Spanish speaker, pediatric neuromuscular specialist. Yeah.
Anything else? Any other thoughts on the subject before we wrap up?
I would really, really like to give a message not only to foundations, but to pharmaceutical companies to try to come up with things from the beginning, from the first stage of development. You should not be waiting until things happen or until we start the research for you to send me things in Spanish. Come up with flyers in Spanish, come up with websites that are easy, that can be easily accessed. And also some lectures, series of lectures in Spanish, where people like me or other people that speak Spanish can discuss different topics. So that's my only ask. And really, hopefully in my foundation, where we're going to actually start in my nonprofit private foundation, it's going to be to reach out to all those patients, not only the regular neuromuscular patients, but everybody else that needs access and they don't have how to. So people without insurance, people above 18, 21 years of age, and international patients that want to come.
Does this foundation have a name yet?
Yes, it's called Neurology Rare Disease. That is the research part of the foundation, the research area. And then the other, it's called Neurology and Neuromuscular Care Center, which is the nonprofit private practice. So it's like two things under the same roof. So hopefully we'll start soon and start getting these patients.
On that note, muchas gracias, buena suerte. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor speaking with Dr. Diana Castro in Dallas, Texas. Thank you.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.